Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Saturday afternoon, can't get here fast enough because it can't be over with fast enough for the 2024-2025 Cleveland Browns. I'm Danny Cunningham. He's Daryl Ryder, filling in for the guys right here on 92.3 The Fan. And now we go on out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline to bring in Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Mary Kay, how excited are you for Saturday at about 7:45 when this is all finally over?
Well, it will be nice to close the books on this very, very disappointing season. But in many cases, our work just begins at that time. So for us, for those who cover the team, it's certainly not over. We come home, we have getaway day, then we'll have press conferences, and then we roll right into trying to figure out who the Browns are going to have playing quarterback for them next season. So this is going to be a very labor-intensive offseason, but it will be nice to kind of close the books on this season.
So we don't know who's going to be playing quarterback for them next season. We don't know who's going to be playing quarterback for them on Saturday even. Does Bailey Zappe deserve the honor of being the 40th starting quarterback for the Browns since the team returned in 99?
You know, I would go ahead and do that. I think it's time to see what he can do. But they spoke very highly, Ken Dorsey spoke very highly of Dorian Thompson-Robinson yesterday and how they want to continue to develop him. And just in the little bit of time that we were there in practice, it looked like there is a chance that maybe he could get the nod again with Bailey Zappe coming in relief. So it's hard to say exactly what they're going to do. But if it were me, I would go ahead and give Bailey the start just for something fresh and different.
Who gave the best pitch to start yesterday, Mary Kay? Bailey Zappe or DTR?
Well, I thought Bailey was very, very upbeat and excited about his opportunity. And when we talked to DTR, he still seemed, I don't know what word I would use to describe it, but he still seemed a little down about his first two starts in each of the last two games when he's turned the ball over twice. So I would say that Bailey maybe may have made a stronger case from a demeanor standpoint just at the mic stand, but that's certainly not the criteria for starting a quarterback.
All eyes with this team aside from the quarterback aspect of it, are always going to be on Myles Garrett. He's had a really impressive season. I don't think he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year again, but he has been obviously the best player that the Browns have, maybe one of the best, maybe the best player they've had since returning to action. But he made comments a few weeks ago about what his future might look like. What do you think the pitch to Myles should be this offseason, Mary Kay?
Well, I don't think they're necessarily going to feel compelled to, you know, make a pitch specifically to him. I think in their exit interviews, they will talk to him in the same way that they talk to many of the players about some of the things that are going to happen in the offseason and why things, the outlook should look bright for 2025 and why they hope to win and contend in 2025. I don't think they're overly concerned with placating or mollifying or whatever Myles Garrett, just to make sure that he wants to stay, although he has earned that status to be able to do that. I think they're just going to conduct business as usual, really, in terms of explaining and showing what the plan is. And I think the plan is to find a quarterback who can go out there and maybe not turn the ball over a million times and play some winning football to complement what I think would have been a much better defense had they not been second in the NFL in giveaways this season.
So the quarterback is obviously the biggest question about this offseason. It's the biggest question about the future of this franchise. What's your best guess as of right now? I'm not holding you to this, but as of 8:24 on January 2nd, what's your best guess as to what the quarterback room is for the Browns next year?
Yeah, that's really hard to say. I mean, with the number three pick or above, I think they're going to have to look really, really long and hard at a quarterback with that top pick. I don't think there's any secret about that. I think that's going to be what they have to do. You don't hope to be picking that high next year or the year after that. So I think you have to very, very strongly consider one of these quarterbacks coming out in the draft, even though at this moment it's not supposed to be the strongest quarterback class that we've ever seen come through these parts. So I think they're going to have to do that, but they'll look elsewhere too. You have to consider, do you want to think about bringing Jameis Winston back? Do you want to trade for a veteran? Do you want to find a bridge quarterback that's going to be coming available? Maybe make a pitch for a Sam Darnold. So they do have a lot of options.
Joel Bitonio also has a decision to make this offseason, Mary Kay, about whether or not he wants to come back for a 12th year. He's obviously seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, mostly bad, mostly ugly. I asked him about how honest he plans to be with the organization about the state of affairs, and you know, he said that it's always like that. My question to you is, how honest do you think this organization is willing to be with itself about the state of affairs? Because last year, they, you know, coming off 11-5, they basically ran it back. Added Jerry Jeudy, ran it back. So how honest do you think now when they look in the mirror, they look at this team, will they be in realizing that some changes are going to have to be made?
I think they understand that they have to do the number one thing, and that is to upgrade their quarterback position. We know that they understand that. And if they can get that right, I maintain that that and just a couple of other pieces should be able to get them back on track. Even if you had plugged in a good winning quarterback this season, they probably would have kept things very, very interesting all the way until the end. So they understand that. And I think if you just utter that to Joel Bitonio and Myles Garrett, I think that will go a long way towards those two guys realizing that they could be onto something here next year. Now, yesterday when we talked to Joel, that sounded a lot to me like a guy very seriously considering retirement. But once again, his body aches. He's in the midst of a 3-13 season right now, probably about to be 3-14 season, and that is not the time to be making huge life decisions. He's got a year left on the contract. Maybe when things settle down a little bit and he feels a little bit better, he will change his mind. But yesterday, he sounded to me like he were almost leaning towards retiring.
How many changes are you expecting? You know, we've heard that Kevin's safe, Andrew's safe, but what type of changes do you think could happen from a staff perspective?
There are always changes amongst the assistants. Some of them get coordinator jobs elsewhere. Some of them, their contracts are up or whatever. So I do think that there will be some changes in the assistant coaching staff. Not sure how many. Maybe Mike Vrabel will want to take a few people with him when he gets a head coaching job, and I think he will. you can't take someone unless you're making them a coordinator. So it's not like he's going to be taking Jim Schwartz, and it wouldn't be easy for him to take Bubba if he wanted to take Bubba Ventrone unless the Browns were willing to part with him. So he might be looking at a few other guys on the staff. He'll be respectful, though. Kevin and Andrew brought him in here. He's not going to raid their staff. But by the same token, there might be a couple of guys that he wants to take with him. And then there were issues on the offensive line. So I think that's an area that they're really going to have to look at. Mike was really helping out a lot with the offensive line. And it was a challenging, challenging year without Bill Callahan. So I think that's another area to look to for some possible changes.
Is there anything that you think that the Browns learned from Mike Vrabel, having him in the building for nearly the full season?
Oh, I think they learned a lot. I think the players learned a lot about toughness and work ethic and practicing hurt and all of those kinds of things and playing hurt. He just brought some of that Patriots culture with him. And I think that was important because this is a football team that tries to make sure that their guys are healthy, gives them some rest, doesn't necessarily work them the way we've seen other teams work in the past. And I think he brought a little bit of a different vibe. And I think there were some other coaches that may have appreciated how he did things or wanted to do things. And I think in his next job that he will probably run some tougher camps and practices than what he saw here. But there are many different ways to go about it. The Browns made the playoffs twice with that philosophy, and Kevin Stefanski earned Coach of the Year twice with that kind of, softer philosophy in practices. And so there are many ways to go about it, but I just think he has a different vibe.
Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer with us now in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You mentioned the quarterback being the biggest question of the offseason, and with the Browns having a potential top three pick, I do think it's safe to assume they're probably going to lose on Saturday against the Ravens, locking that in, but drafting a quarterback could be on the table. Why should Browns fans trust that Andrew Berry is going to get this quarterback selection, whether it is the draft, whether it is a bridge guy, but why should they trust he's going to get this one right?
Well, he's never really had a chance to show who he would draft himself as a quarterback in this regime with such a high pick. Now, we know that they've taken DTR, in the fifth round. You can't really say that counts in terms of how it might inform what he's going to do with a top three pick. But I've said this many times on my podcast, on our podcast and different things, that I do think they should bring in a few consultants to help look at the situation. It's a very difficult decision to make. Even John Dorsey, when he had the number one overall pick in 2018, went with Baker Mayfield over Josh Allen and, over Lamar Jackson, although nobody knew what Lamar Jackson really was going to be at that point. But it's a tough decision to make. And I think you can trust these guys to make it, but I would also get another pair of eyes on it.
I hope they don't spend another $100,000 on a quarterback study they're not going to listen to, Mary Kay.
Well, you never know. I would think that they're going to marshal and use all of their resources to try to get it right. But I think that there are good consultants out there that you can talk to. Now, they did consult with, in the Baker year, Scott McLuhan helped John Dorsey make that pick. And really was all about Baker Mayfield. So they did do that, and that there is a precedent for them bringing in a consultant or consulting with someone about the quarterback decision. So even then, it's difficult to get it right. But I do think that they should use whatever resources they possibly can.
Well, they also did it in 2014, and they drafted Johnny Manziel. I'm not gonna lie to you. I am really struggling with whether or not they're capable of actually getting this right. We're on QB40 now. We're
right.
The suspense is killing me. Who QB40 is gonna be? And I feel bad, but I have zero faith that this organization is remotely capable of getting the quarterback thing right, and that is like the most critical piece to any puzzle, as you were just talking about.
Well, that was a different regime back then. That was a new general manager in Ray Farmer. He was overmatched in his job at that point, I believe, and you had a lot of influence from ownership and other people at that time during that year. That's when they were drafting the Justin Gilberts and the Johnny Manziels, and it just obviously didn't go well at all. So this is a different, much more professional, experienced regime, and I have a lot more faith in them to get it right, I think, than you do.
Do you think, Mary Kay, that Nick Chubb will play again for the Cleveland Browns?
Well, I certainly think they will bring him back and hope that he is stronger next year than he was this year. It was a difficult thing to come off of that devastating knee injury, and he made progress each week, and you saw his average increase over the last few weeks, and he'll have even more time to rest the knee as he rehabs from his current injury. And so, yeah, I think he'll have a chance to come back and show what he can do.
You got dinner reservations at Federal Hill set for Saturday?
We do have a place in mind to go on Saturday night. So definitely not Saturday night, actually.
Friday
night.
Yeah, so, they play Saturday, Daryl. Come on. You cover the team.
I know.
You got to know when the game is.
It's been a long year.
It has been a long year.
Can't end soon enough.
Plans for Friday night for sure.
Well, yeah. Mary Kay, enjoy Baltimore. Enjoy the final chapter in this version of the Cleveland Browns. I'm sure it's been an incredible journey to chronicle.
It really has, and it's not over yet.
It's not over yet, but mercifully it will come to end this weekend. Thank you so much for the time.
Sure. Take care.
There she is, Mary Kay Cabot at Cleveland.com, appearing on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Hi, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. We've helped over 20,000 wedding parties get suited up. And here's the deal. You don't need to rent a suit. For about the same price, you can own one that's perfectly tailored for you. Over 60% of our business comes from referrals because we make it so easy. Whether your groomsmen live nearby or out of state, we've got everything covered. Trust me, this is the easiest part of planning your wedding. Stop by Nick's Menswear and let us show you why we're the fastest growing suit company in the country. Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
If you're bringing everybody back and there's already questions about, I guess, both Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you actually trust Kevin Stefanski to be the guy making these picks?
Andrew Berry.
In the draft, or what did I say?
Kevin Stefanski, yeah.
Do you trust Andrew Berry to be the guy making the picks for this team, whether it's the third overall pick, the first overall pick, or otherwise? And I do think it's a valid question because, like, this is the thing that I kept going back to, too. As I thought about, like, okay, I understand why they're trying to bring it back and keep continuity, because a lot of times, like, they try to build these front offices where they're aligned. They have two people who are like-minded, thinking on the same page. They know what the goals are. They're kind of moving in the same direction. So I can understand why you're bringing everybody back. But the thing I kept going back to was this exact question. Do I actually trust Andrew Berry to make the picks, though? And that's probably the most concerning thing for me is I don't think I do. Like, I don't know that we feel, any of us feel, like, overly confident in his ability to identify and draft talent for this team, because he hasn't hit on a number of picks over the last 5 years, including first rounders that he has had. So I ask you, Jake, like, how much does it worry you that, yes, the Browns have a top three pick right now, and that likely is going to be the case after next week as well, but it's Andrew Berry who is the guy pulling the trigger on whatever decision, pick, player they're going to use it for?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love it. I'll be honest. Like, I don't have a lot of faith for Berry, but I do. So I sit there and think about this, and while he's made, what, 30? I think we're up to 34 draft picks that he's made in total.
I think you're right about that, yes.
Not a ton of them that have panned out. Not ones that you feel too great about. I also wonder if you sit there and you've had two first-rounders that he's made at picks 10 and 26, and if we almost overblow the entire situation of, like, how many chances has he really had?
So we've got an Andrew Berry defense.
No, I want to make it very clear. It's not an Andrew Berry defense. Like, it is a genuine question of, are you too quick to the gun on Andrew Berry with the lack of first-round talent? Because, by the way, I don't think anybody when Greg Newsom was drafted was upset thinking that's a terrible pick. And then he goes and gets JOK in the second round, who I actually thought, I was clamoring for the Browns to take in the first round because I liked him a lot. Like, well,
that is maybe his best pick. Is there somebody better than JOK that he's made?
Not even close.
JOK, I mean, Cedric Tillman's maybe becoming a player. I mean, that probably is it. But the thing with JOK now is, like, we don't even know what his future holds. I want to be clear, like, that doesn't eliminate the pick. Like, it was clearly a good pick, the right pick. He made a good call on that one, and it was, you know, it was easy at that point. He had fallen so far, it was like, you got to take JOK. He was a first-round graded player that was in the second round. But, yeah, like, it just stinks that we are sort of – we have this ominous perspective on what his career is even going to look like from here because, well, we don't really know when he's even going to be back in the building and nobody can tell us anything. So, on the surface, there you're right in that maybe he hasn't been given enough time, but it's not like John Dorsey was here all that long either, right?
No.
And John Dorsey nailed – like the majority of his, maybe not even the majority, because I think he had like one really good draft, and then his second draft was like, okay. There's actually a couple players from his second draft that have turned out to be pretty good players elsewhere, like Austin Corbett, for example. He's still a starting lineman in this league, but he didn't make it as a starting lineman on the Browns. So like there was still but you can still see like the talent acquisition, the talent evaluation there, where John Dorsey nailed on a number of players that are either core guys still on this Browns team or playing somewhere else and still competitive and good football players. I get what you're saying. I also just think like 5 years in, if we're still asking ourselves questions about like their ability to identify these players and they only have so many guys they've hit on, I think that's the biggest concern. And that is understanding that he went 3 years without a first round pick, but that's also a situation that you put yourself in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like you wanted to get Deshaun Watson. I know they say it was a group effort. Everybody had a say in it. But you're the GM that falls on, it's on your lap at the end of the day. Like, that is your decision at the end of the day. So I have a hard time just, like, consensusly sitting there and being like, oh, yeah, like, you get a pass because you didn't have first-round picks. No, like, you made the decision to trade those first-rounders. And when you make that decision, you are banking on, yes, we trust our, you know, talent evaluators and our scouts to identify players in on day two, on day three, that can still be pieces for us moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if we go through this draft, and it's likely going to be Andrew Berry making the picks, right?
What would have to change between now and Sunday, or I guess Saturday, for them to actually fire Andrew Berry?
I think it would be more Jimmy Haslam's mind's already made up that he's not going to be here, and he's been but
he's been telling everybody that he's not doing like
right.
I think the number of times, like if he says that one time in like October, maybe, but he said it as recently as like last week. Like Diana Rossini was like reporting it like last week, so it's like at this point, And like Ian Rappaport said, columns about like, you know, what coaches are going to be looking for jobs or what teams are going to be looking for coaches. And the Browns continue to just be like, nope, status quo, nothing's changing. So I don't believe anything's going to change. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's two things that go into it. One, you compare him to Dorsey, who's probably one of the best like drafters of, I don't know, the last couple of decades. Like he nails a lot of his picks, whether that was with Kansas City, whether that's with Cleveland, how much impact he has in Detroit, who knows? I'm sure he has a pretty good say in that as well. Like, he nails just about everything. Andrew's been the opposite, but like if he goes through this draft and hits on like 6 of the 9 picks, what are you going to say? Like, okay, he's been really bad the first few years. Are you ditching him after that, after he hits 6 picks? Like, I don't have a lot of trust in him. Again, it's not a defense of Andrew Berry.
You can hit on 6 of 9 picks, and the team could still be 3 and whatever next year, and you could still fire everybody. I mean, that happens all the time in the NFL. But, no, I mean, from like a trust level standpoint, I guess if he hits on 6 of 9 picks,
you'd feel a lot better.
Assuming they make all 9 picks, or if they like trade out of 3 and get multiple firsts or something, they nail those 2 picks. Yeah, like, I think at that point, you start to trust Andrew Berry more, and you're like, okay, so this guy can evaluate talent, and he just maybe didn't have the first-round picks to sort of prove that the last couple years.
Yeah, like, I don't think when you draft Jed Wills at 10, like, I like Tristan Wirfs. It felt obvious to me that Wirfs was a good pick, but I also think, consensusly, nobody was there where it was, oh, like, that was a surprising pick. It was sort of, you had the 3 tackles at the top of the draft. Whoever you end up picking was kind of dealer's choice. Nobody had like it's clearly going to be Wirfs, then it's going to be Wills, and then it'll be Andrew Thomas was at the other tackle in that pick, like around that area. I don't think that was like a given. You just missed on Wills, which, again, it's his job. I'm not trying to give him a pass. I don't have a lot of trust in him. I'm just wondering if it's, are you too quick to the gun? It's been 5 years, but you also haven't handed him a ton of like quality draft capital to work with either. Like, yeah. He's had second and third round picks. Again, it's not me saying I trust him. It's not me saying give him another chance. It's just running through my head of, okay, if he goes in the first round, you give him the third pick, and he absolutely nails it, and you have a stud, and then the second round, he nails it again.
I just think 5 years in, we have a pretty good indication of like what he's done with his drafts, whether he's had first round picks or not. And it's not just about the picks either. Like, there's other players that he's signed that he's missed on. And at this point, the only thing you can tell me he does consistently well is nails trades for wide receivers and is really good at balancing the books and moving money around. Those are the two things I can say he does well. Now, I will give an argument for why, if you don't trust Andrew Berry to make any sort of pick, why it's actually important that the Browns have the highest pick possible. I'll give you that when we get back as well.
How are you, buddy?
Yeah, okay.
And Kevin Stefanski ready to barely answer those questions.
Do a little peppering. Hey, before we get into some other stuff,
I've taken my vitamins to prepare.
Mike Vrabel, apparently no longer under contract with the Browns. Explain exactly how this has gone, because I've read some things that say his contract expired. I've read others that say that the Browns have allowed him to go look for what's the deal?
Yeah, I mean, the Browns just want to give him an opportunity to get a leg up on the head coaching searches around the league and allow him to be available to interview for those positions. This is not really a surprise. He was brought in with the intent that he was going to seek head coaching opening after the season. Did a lot of work with the tight ends and the offensive line. Did some work with the front office behind the scenes, obviously with the entirety of the coaching staff behind the scenes. But, this just gives him an opportunity to be available to interview for some other jobs here, head coaching jobs, whether that's at the NFL level, whether that ends up being in Columbus, Ohio. Vrabes is free to seek full-time employment.
Can I ask one follow-up on that? And it's this.
Well, it's your show, so you can ask whatever you want, Jeffrey.
Daryl, it's our show. It's this.
I thought it was our time, Mr. Hamm.
Have some pizza. If the Browns are doing a nice thing and allowing him to, get into the cycle, can we assume then that either A, the Browns wouldn't be interested in him as a head coach, or B, the Browns have a head coach?
I really don't know how to answer that, because I kind of feel it's like one and the same, right? If they have a head coach, then they're not interested.
Okay.
So, you know what I mean? Like, okay. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to answer that other than they have
the
a
Browns
head coach.
Thought they're they, not gonna if the Browns thought they needed a head coach, they wouldn't let him look, would they? I'm assuming Kevin Stefanski's back. That's my point. Would you agree?
It's the worst kept secret that he's back. Yeah, I mean that's not exactly a state secret. The organization has made that known to everyone and their brother.
With assessing everything at the end of the year again, so I assume he's back, and I'm glad of that. I think that's a good move.
No, I think they've already done their assessment.
Good. All right. Good.
I think they know what's wrong, and the answer is everything.
Well, at least they could be specific.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's the key. All right.
They're narrowed it down, that's for sure.
Exactly. You really know how to just put the magnifying glass on it. So anyway, D, let's head into what people are really talking about right now, which is our old friend, the Art Modell Law, which was put in a little bit ago. The city of Cleveland, I believe, had put out a letter, which I think consists of Mayor Justin Bibb grabbing a feather from a quail and proceeding to write on a parchment and then holding it out in front of City Hall with starting it as hear ye,
yeah, but no, he sent it via email. So congrats on the mayor. Ditching the
quill and the parchment.
Quill to email. So,
oh, my goodness. All right, Daryl, can you explain to us what in the world is going on and what it all means?
And that wasn't the idea of the Modell Law, right? To keep the team from moving 12 miles down the road?
Yeah, my understanding of the Modell Law was to keep the team in the market. But, you know, they're really trying to do this thing, letter of the law, within the city limits here. Look, this is why the Browns filed that suit in federal court, to get the clarity on the Modell Law and the boundaries surrounding it. I'm pretty sure Cleveland don't want to pay $1 billion to renovate the existing stadium. And by the way, Cleveland owns that stadium. The Browns are under no legal obligation to spend one single dollar on that building. And yet they have over the years. And in fact, they fronted the cash 100% of it for the last massive renovation. And really the only massive renovation that's been done there. I mean, there's been work done to fix things, but I think a lot of gamesmanship, a lot of political theater being done by the mayor. I have serious doubts about his sincerity when it comes to wanting to keep the Browns. I have serious doubts about the legal standing, but I'm not a lawyer. I didn't write the law. I've read it. I think that folks need to pay attention to one of the clauses in the law, and it basically says that, unless you have an agreement with the subdivision, which in this case would be the city of Cleveland, and I would translate that to, I think the mayor of Cleveland wants money from the Browns. I think that this is what this comes down to. I think he wants to have a settlement where the Browns give the city tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars before they build the dome in Brook Park. I think it's a shakedown. That's just my opinion on the situation. One of the first things that, you know, the Browns met with Mayor Bibb in early September and told him specifically, renovation is off the table. We are going to pursue the Brook Park project. And the mayor immediately started asking the Browns for money. He wanted money for demoing the stadium. He wanted money for lakefront development. He wanted money from small business owners for small business owners to be impacted by the Browns leaving, also known as the guy selling T-shirts on Lakeside Avenue. That's what I gleaned from this whole thing. And I don't know why he isn't waiting for this case to be heard in federal court and for the court to rule on it before he just flies off the handle and he sends this demand letter to the Haslam saying that, you know, he's going to pursue them, selling the team. I don't think anyone here in Northeast that lives here in Northeast Ohio has $5.2 billion or whatever the Browns are actually worth these days laying around. This thing has gotten to be a bloody mess. The Browns tried to avoid that. But the mayor of Cleveland is very intent on making this as confrontational a fight as possible. And, that's just kind of where it's at.
Daryl and Daryl Ryder joining us, our Browns beat reporter. If the city of Cleveland, if Mayor Bibb doesn't want the Brook Park Dome, and nor do the county commissioners, apparently.
Right.
What are they offering?
Well, they offered Burke. But see, what they
did offer Burke as a place to put a dome?
Yeah, but here's the problem with that. What they're not understanding is the cost to build at Burke is significantly higher than to build in Brook Park. And time is a factor. Construction costs are exploding for these facilities. And so the Browns are on a timeline here. They want to get it built in time for 2029. And they want to get it built at the cost of $2.4 billion. And we all know it's not going to ultimately end up costing $2.4 billion. The Browns have already said if there are overruns for the dome, they would cover those costs. And obviously, the Browns being a business, they don't want to cover those costs. They don't have to. So, there is a time crunch here to get this done. But this isn't something that was done in a vacuum. The city of Cleveland by no means was blindsided by any of this. The Browns actually held their announcement for 5 to 6 weeks at the mayor's request because the mayor was afraid if the Browns announced they were moving to Brook Park, the federal government would then pull $60 million in funding for lakefront redevelopment. So the Browns said, fine, we'll be a good partner. We'll keep our mouth shut, hold off on the announcement until the federal money is secured. Then we'll move forward. And then what did the mayor of Cleveland do as a thank you? He decided to upstage the Browns announcement by a day. And, you know, going off on, you know, the Browns and just what a dastardly act this was, you know. Not like the team's moving to Baltimore again. They're just going literally across the street from the airport. And the mayor is acting like the team's moving to San Antonio. So, it takes a lot for me to defend the Haslams. But in this case, I kind of have to defend them. They've tried to handle this in a very professional way. They've tried not to negotiate through the media, unlike the mayor of Cleveland and the county. You just have this very bitter, animus, ugly fight over where the Browns are going to play going on. And look, my thing is, if the city of Cleveland wants them that bad, then y'all pay for the stadium renovation. It's your building. You own it. Then you pay for it, 100% of it. Browns shouldn't have to pay a penny toward it if you're gonna do this. You know, the Browns are trying to do a $3.4 billion construction project. Yes, there's $1.2 billion that they're asking in tax incentives or whatever generated by the complex to be built to cover the bonds or, you know, but like that's a massive construction project the Browns are trying to do. And, you know,
something huge for our region.
Yeah. By the way, I mean, God forbid, you know, who would want, why would you want to recruit Final Fours to Cleveland? Why would you want to do that? Why would you, I don't know, hope maybe in the slim chance, maybe you get a Super Bowl? Why would you want to try and bring the NFL draft back? Why would you try and bring college football playoff games here or bowl games or neutral site games? Like, I mean, oh my God, the horror of the Haslams trying to do that. Now, granted, they have, financial motive for doing this. They would control parking. They would control the building more. They would stand to make a lot of money. But
the development putting, all around it, sure.
Yeah, they're also putting a lot of their money into the project as well.
In other words, business, Daryl?
Right. So, I don't get the political theater. I just feel like the mayor jumped the gun yesterday with that letter. And, you know, like, let's see what the federal court rules. You know, the law is very vague. It is really, really vague. And, I understand why, the city might be reading it the way it is. But I also understand why the Browns are reading it the way that they're reading it. So I don't know why you just didn't wait for the court to go ahead and rule on it. Instead, you fire off we're gonna invoke it, and we're gonna try and find somebody else to take the team away from you. Like, okay, that's a real good way of negotiating and trying to. Because I honestly thought there was a settlement coming. I really did. I thought that this thing would just get settled out of court. I thought that yes, the Browns would give the city of Cleveland some money for stadium demolition and, you know, maybe some other stuff or whatever. But now if I'm the Browns, I'm drawing the line in the sand and saying the heck with you guys. I'll wait for what the court tells us we can do, and that's just going to be it. And until then, we're moving full steam ahead with the Brook Park project.
Our Cleveland sports reporter, Daryl Ryder, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, the other part of this that I wonder is, okay, so right now, they're going to evoke this law. So clearly the new victor in all of these proceedings are going to be billable hours. That's going to be the victor.
Yeah, the winners are the lawyers. Yeah. Like, it's good to be a lawyer right now.
It's
right?
Really good to be a lawyer throughout all of this. And then the city of Cleveland gets dragged through the mud. And then let's say we hit this point where they open the 30-day, it's a 30-day window,
no,
correct?
It's 6 months.
6 months, that's it. The six-month window for somebody else to step in and buy this franchise. I don't know where it's coming from, especially if it's got to be somebody who's
not
a
going
resident.
To happen.
Well,
they're not going to sell the franchise.
I've got one thought, and it's an ugly thought, Daryl, and if you don't have this answer, I understand, and please don't make me think this is you putting you out in a spot that you won't understand. I wonder.
Get ready, Daryl.
I wonder with the new rule that's been put in with the NFL, and this is my dark secret place that I don't like to go to, with that groups can come in and buy, that they're letting like funds.
Well, that's limited to 10% ownership.
So, oh, it's only limited to 10%?
Yes. So
okay, I'll hush up then.
Yeah, so like, I mean, the Haslams, it is still subject to NFL owner approval, but yeah, it's limited to 10%, so that'd be a fast way for any and we've already seen a couple of franchises do this. In the Browns' case, according to Forbes, the Browns are valued over $5 billion. I think they said $5.15 billion for 2024. So that would be a quick way for Jimmy Haslam to raise a quick $515 million. Now, I have been told that he is not interested in exploring that avenue at this time. So, but yeah, and the Modell law says it has to be local ownership. So, and that's kind of how the Haslams actually. It's funny, the city of Cleveland and Mayor Bibb doesn't think the Haslams understand the Modell law, when in fact the Haslams used the Modell law to buy the Columbus Crew, and save the Crew.
Yep.
So, you know,
they know it better than most.
Yeah. So,
well, because my whole thought, Daryl, my deep dark secret was that you were going to have a Saudi come in and buy an apartment. No. And then all of a sudden go, yeah, I got the cash. I got a place right over there, right on the lake. Here's the cash. No. You want it in, do you prefer duffel bags, briefcases, or you want me to write you a check?
Yeah, so, all right, so that's limited to 10%.
Cool, that puts the kibosh on that. All right, now I feel better. Thanks, Daryl.
Let me get one last thought before we let you.
I got some Browns news to pass along, too, if you want.
Go.
Cedric Tillman's placed on injured reserve. They filled his roster spot by bringing back running back John Kelly. And then they made a bunch of practice squad moves. So, but the big news, there will be no Cedric Tillman in the regular season finale.
All right.
Crud.
What have we learned about his former high school teammate in the last two starts, Dorian Thompson-Robinson?
That he's not any good.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen,
hashtag analysis.
Not an NFL quarterback. That's what we've learned. What, you disagree with me?
Let me give you this one.
No.
Give me a name, we'll let you run.
Right.
Deshaun Watson, Jameis Winston, Bailey Zappi, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Which one or two will be back on this team next year?
None of the above. Well, I mean, obviously they have to keep Deshaun, right? The question is the mechanism in which they keep him. Is it PUP? Is it IR? Is it a 52-man roster and he just doesn't do anything? Like, that remains to be seen, right? But it's obviously Watson because of the contract. But the other guys, I think Winston, if there aren't any better options out there, I can't justify DTR again. And, you know, if they're not going to, we'll find out here in a little bit if they're going to play Bailey Zappi on Sunday. But, you know, if you ain't going to play him now, you aren't ever going to play him. So I don't know why you'd keep him.
All right, buddy. Pepper the coach with questions. We'll talk to you later.
He'll barely answer them for you.
All right, guys.
So Dane Brugler up there on the artist formerly known as Twitter. Some NFL scouts, and this is from his recent column on The Athletic, and, you know, Dane, of course, local guy, and Warren, great dude, great resource for all of those things. The Beast is must read if you're a draft guy. Some NFL scouts believe one or two quarterbacks are deserving of this year's first round, while others think drafting any quarterback in the first round would be a mistake. A comment from one AFC scout, man, I feel bad for the teams trying to find one in this group. Egads.
Okay.
To use a term from 1912.
Okay.
There's a comment after it where someone asked Dane, Jeff.
Yes.
Who would you have as a higher grade between J.J. McCarthy, Cam Ward, and Shedeur Sanders? Dane responds, J.J. McCarthy.
Yes. That's telling. That's telling here.
Mm-hmm. I have said it before. I will say it again, and I will say it often. I am not taking a quarterback in the first round of this draft.
Okay. I'm not saying that yet.
I'm saying it.
I'll be completely honest. I've said this before, though. I'm kind of living in the moment here. I have not looked ahead to the draft yet. I will sit down and take a look for whatever my silly vision will do for looking at a quarterback.
You've done pretty well. And I have to give you props.
And I'll take a look at these guys. My only thought is this. Just because a guy might be the best quarterback or two in a specific draft doesn't mean he's the guy you need to hitch the old wagon to. Do you know what I mean? Just because you have the, let's say, third pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a quarterback,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that you should draft a quarterback who in other drafts would go in the late second round.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the Browns have to be really careful. And if they don't draft a quarterback, that's fine. We're going to get heavily into it. I mean, I'm sorry. This isn't nice to say, and Andy would say, don't go behind the curtain. Browns quarterback, it's the gift that keeps on giving to Sports Talk Radio.
Very much so.
Okay, I sure wish that John Dorsey would have taken Josh Allen, and we wouldn't have any conversation about it. I wish he would have taken Lamar Jackson.
Still would have.
I wish Baker Mayfield had played the way he's playing now, when he was with the Browns on a more consistent basis than he did, because he'd probably still be here, and they probably wouldn't have looked for Deshaun Watson, because Baker's doing a really nice job now. But at the time, I understood why they were looking to upgrade the position. All that said, just because you have a high pick doesn't mean, and you need a quarterback, doesn't mean you have to take a quarterback if you don't think that quarterback is worthy of the high pick. Like if the best quarterback in the draft, is it Shurter Sanders? Is it Cam Ward? I don't know. Whichever one they think is the best quarterback in this draft is the 17th player on their board, run far, run fast.
Right.
Take the guy who's number three or number two. If a team ahead of you doesn't take that guy, take the best player, because this team has a lot of holes. It has a lot of spots that could use a little help. And so I would do that. And if that quarterback that you like is there in the second round, okay, go for it. And I just we're going to get into the quarterback in a big way.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, coming up, I think there are a lot of young guys around the league who are going to be available, who might be really intriguing prospects to bring in and give to Kevin Stefanski and say, fix him, make it work, turn him into this year's Sam Darnold, turn him into Geno Smith, and I think that's possible. I really do. You know, I got to be honest. Zach Wilson was not good with the Jets. He was good enough that they thought he was worth the number two pick in the draft. Now, does that fit in exactly with what I just talked about? He was the second pick in the draft because the Jets needed a quarterback and they just took him at the second pick when they should have never done that. That's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible, right?
No, I wasn't disagreeing with you in that regard. I was going to just say, don't EJ Manuel yourself.
Exactly, which is what?
Talk yourself into a quarterback that doesn't belong there.
Exactly right.
Everybody told you in that draft there wasn't a quarterback worth taking in the first round.
And the Bills did.
And the Bills talked themselves into EJ Manuel.
And it didn't work.
Right.
You know, and if you have doubts, you don't take them. Now, how did Jamarcus Russell turn into a complete bust? He did. You just got to make sure. And so if you have any doubts, you don't necessarily have to land your quarterback for the next 15 years this offseason. You could land your quarterback for the next three. That'd be okay.
Yeah.
You know, go get a quarterback who you think can play for you for 3 or 4 years. That's okay. Or for 1 year.
Yeah.
You don't have to solve this riddle. Just go get a guy who can play quarterback for you for a year.
What everyone will tell you, or at least what I've read to this point, again, I've been watching college all season. I will say that when I've tried to see all the big name quarterbacks and all the big name teams a couple different times, I've been watching in bowl season, all that kind of stuff. I've been reading along the way. Now, I am by no means a quarterback expert. I do not commit my life to watching all 22 tape. I'm just somebody who will sit there and go, oh, wow, he stuck that into a tight window. Nice throw. Okay, read that decently. Okay, that'll work. Like that's what we're dealing with here. Please do not think for the life of you that I should be the end all be all. everybody says to give it a year with all of these guys.
Yeah.
Everybody says if you're going to take Shador, he's going to need to sit. Well, if you're going to take Cam Ward, he's going to need to sit.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think what Tom said was accurate, which is, okay, if he comes in and it looks like he can play, then play him. That's okay. I don't mind that at all. I also don't mind letting a guy sit. In this class,
right,
it appears that these guys need a year.
Right.
That's what the general scuttlebutt is among all the scouts, that these fellas coming out are going to need a year.
But I'm... Jeff, and again, some of it's my upbringing and just general preference when it comes to this stuff. I think the method we should be working on is, unless you're holding Peyton Manning, unless you're holding Andrew Luck, I don't even know if I'd put Caleb Williams in that same conversation, but you get kind of what I'm going after. Unless I've got these guys that are just surefire, yeah, this is going to work.
They look like they're going to be starting quarterbacks, exactly, in the NFL. And remember, there are only 32 of those jobs, and how many of them are really good? So we're looking at like maybe, you know, 10, 15 guys who you think are really good.
I'm sitting the vast majority of them. And it could easily be the fact that I have Ron Wolf in my head. And I have the Ron Wolf philosophy, and you could say Ted Thompson, Brian Gutekunst, whatever you want to point to. That whole idea that I'm going to bring this guy in, and I want him to sit. Because I want him to see how fast the NFL game is. I want him to learn from the guy in front of him. I want him to adapt. I want him to see things through those eyes, go through practice reps, and at least realize of what it takes to be a professional at this level. I love what Atlanta did with Michael Penix, where even as things went south with Kirk Cousins, they went, forget it, he's sitting. And it's not until the end of the year that we're bringing that guy in. I loved it. I thought that was the smartest thing that you could do with that guy, is just let him realize how fast the game is moving and what he needs to do to get better.
Jay's in Solon. Hi, Jay.
How are you, Jay?
What's going on, y'all? A couple things. I love the show, as always.
Thank you, man.
I don't think Stefanski has developed anybody. Just period on that. And y'all can say what y'all need to say on that. Two, I think we do need a quarterback. And we also always have to say quarterbacks are only good as their offensive line. So on top of having some decent receivers, and hopefully they stay, having decent tight ends, defense is okay. I think that we should get a quarterback and work on our offensive line and also downsizing our offensive line. We talked about that before. Getting some smaller guys, faster guys, that match up better with these fast defensive ends. Outside of that, it's going to be tough coming to Cleveland, especially with all of this mayor stuff and the process of all this stuff going on. It's going to be a huge conversation. So it's a tough place to come to at this time.
Well, here's the thing, Jay. If, as funny as it sounds, man, if you're worried about where you're playing, like, I don't know what to tell you. You know where you're playing. It's down in the lakefront until 2029. Like, that's pretty much, that's locked in stone. That's not going anywhere. That's, for these guys, man, it is day-to-day, year-to-year, at best, that's as far as they're looking ahead. So I would not put any worry into where the Browns are going to be playing football. They're playing at the stadium until 2029.
Do you think Stefanski is developing anyone? Do you think he developed any quarterbacks, any running backs? Do you think he developed any parts of our team as we went along? And that's all I have. Y'all have a good day.
All right, Jay. Yeah, I think he's done a nice job with some quarterbacks. Now, do we have a starting quarterback? No. Has it worked with DTR? Not yet. I don't know that it will. I thought he did a nice job with some of the other guys who are here. He put Joe Flacco in a good position. I think he put Jameis in a good position. You know, before anybody says, well, Jameis threw the interceptions. Yeah, so did Joe. But it worked with Joe because the team around him, I think, was better and they won. I think Kevin did a nice job with those guys. And if you're saying he hasn't developed anybody, so draft a quarterback, well, then why would he develop that guy?
Because you want to fire the coach and get somebody else.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's it.
Is if, and this is the weird part of where this team is right now as well, is I can tell you, goodness, what, 40% of your fan base? Maybe it's higher than that. Thinks your head coach just ain't it.
Yeah, but how many teams is that the case with? You know, my guess is that 99% of Chiefs fans like Andy Reid.
Yeah.
Okay. I can tell you all Steeler fans don't like Mike Tomlin.
That is very true.
I can tell you all Packer fans
Don't like Matt LaFleur.
Matt LaFleur.
I got the text to prove that one.
And they're pretty good.
I mean, you can say the same thing with John Harbaugh
exactly.
in Baltimore. You know, you're always going to disagree.
Yeah. Very few coaches are beloved by their fan base. Very few.
The part of it was, is he's never really been handed a quarterback and said, all right, here you go. Develop it. Make it work.
Well,
Kirk Cousins might be as close as they came. Or maybe Case Keenum. But even, you know, heck, he's never really been handed the 23-year-old.
Well, and I said this yesterday. I don't think he's had a quarterback here who was his guy. Not one. He inherited Baker. Had to make Baker work. Did a pretty solid job. Made Baker play some pretty good football. After that, I don't think he's had his guy. Deshaun, I don't think, was his guy. Jameis, probably not his guy. Joe Flacco wasn't his guy. DTR, probably not his guy. I wonder. And I wonder what the offseason holds at that spot. It's Baskin and Phelps here on The Fan.
I will tell you, I did not see, was it 41-21 coming down the pipe?
Nobody had blowout on their bingo card.
Yeah, and here's the thing, 41-21 doesn't even make it seem as much of a blowout as it really seemed, because at no point, I mean, even after Oregon scored going into half,
yeah.
I said, well, they get the ball coming back, you know, that, and they scored right out of there. Even then, I was like, man, there's just... Because Ohio State scored immediately after, there was just such a big hill to climb.
I had a lot of Ohio State fans at that moment, though, especially after the second Dylan Gabriel touchdown, start to panic again.
I will say, well done, Ohio State. So, Pete, coming up in about 35 minutes here. And so we asked a question, are we underplaying how much the Browns still believe in Deshaun? I just think it's lying through your teeth. I think this organization has shown a willingness to just continue to say things even as they surpass the bounds of what is good taste or reality. I don't see the win in it.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Is what's the win of lying about Deshaun for this way?
Is it a Hail Mary to try and make it seem like, to try and build up Deshaun? Hey, Deshaun, we still believe in you, fella.
We know you're going to be the backup quarterback. Do they think that Deshaun is... what's the worst case scenario? Deshaun gets offended that he has to compete for a backup quarterback job and then, I don't know, doesn't show up? That doesn't sound like the worst thing I've ever seen.
Can I give you one more? It's to continue to try and mitigate the blowback on what an absolute abject failure and disaster the Deshaun move is.
Which it would just be so much easier if they just ripped the Band-Aid off and admitted, hey guys, we were wrong here, let's continue to go. Because every time you see Deshaun out there, it's a clear-cut reminder of how far you set this franchise back.
Yeah, it is. But here's the thing, because I have said for a while, if Jimmy Haslam himself came off Mount Bratenall and came down with us commoners here, and I don't mean literally on our show, but hi Jimmy, you're invited.
I'm sure he's gonna take us up on that one.
him and J-Dub, the whole family,
Cletus
really.
Too, yeah.
Cletus, Billy Sue. If they came out and did a press conference, and Jimmy just said, not specific to anything, but hey. These are my right guys. Basically, what he said to the media, and then say, whatever you think the biggest failure is in the last 5 years, it's on me. Meaning that without saying, hey, that Deshaun thing, that's on me, because he can't, because he's still going to be on the roster. saying, effectively, without saying it, that's on me, I think that might woo some Browns fans back. I think the problem is, every time you touch that stove, every time you put your hand there and say, hey, this is just this quote still is the wildest defense of a player from the article. There's nothing in his physical skill set that suggests he can't still be productive. One, was that written by AI? Because it wasn't written by a real human. And then two, you're saying he's a head case. This is not the defense of Deshaun that you're looking for.
Yeah, they're acknowledging that mentally upstairs doesn't have it all.
Yeah, if he wasn't completely checked out between the ears, he could be a Hall of Fame quarterback.
But they're hanging on to that, though. They're hanging on to the idea that if we can get him mentally right, then all of a sudden he'll be fine and everything will go back to normal, and it just won't. It never will.
But and this is where you got to draw the line.
The Browns almost feel like they let Deshaun down.
It's better. Well, they should.
They talk like that. They talk like they feel like they let Deshaun down instead of Deshaun letting them down.
In fairness, they did mention Stefanski waiting till year three to switch to a Deshaun offense. That was something that was thrown out there. That was one crumb of, hey, maybe we could have done this better. Still no word of what Albert has said multiple times, which was Deshaun was coached really hard in Houston, and that's not what Kevin did here. Because quite frankly, if you put both pieces in, it really makes Kevin look bad. But here's where you have to draw the line. It's better for you and me if lying about Deshaun still believing that he...
Because
then they're not building the house on that.
Well, also, they're not then idiots.
Yeah.
Well, there's no other real way to play. I'm sorry that was blunt, but like if you think Deshaun Watson could play football, I got no choice but to think you don't know what the hell you're doing with the football
team. That's one way to look at it. There's another, and listen, anybody who's ever read about Steve Jobs and Apple, the reality distortion field... when you get in corporate run environments like this, because I know I tease them about being a homespun team, they're full of Ivy Leaguers. This is not Cincinnati mom and pop shop where Mike Brown was an awful head coach and now his daughter is an equally awful owner, rather not head coach. Mm-hmm. So this is a big corporation. That's all the Browns are, and so they only do things in self interest. But I'd rather them lie to you. But internally, they're like, yeah, that dude's not Stetton. Like, have some realism there. Because you've said the word, maybe they're idiots. That might be possible, by the way.
Well, I mean, that's the only answer I got. If they think that what they're telling us.
The other one is they're good at deluding themselves. Like, part of keeping your job is some sort of keep away from Jimmy Haslam. It's the Paul DePodesta. Well, it's not based on results. You winning or losing your job. So... I guess we'll have to judge it on other things. Well, you have to find a way to massage that message in a way that then allows you to say, okay, so this is kind of what happened here, but nobody's really at fault. I actually think that is one of the things that's just wild to me. Can we just go back to the fact that this is an organization that fired AVP last year in the name of getting more out of Deshaun Watson, scapegoat. Yeah. Might have lost you Bill Callahan. Not great, Bob.
Well, the AVP stuff, as evidenced in the piece there, they don't think that was more scapegoating. They believe it was a difference in philosophy and how you run your offensive system.
Well, but again, you can say he needed to go in the name of, we got to get more for Deshaun.
Okay, that's
every
fair.
Year, there's been somebody, when something hasn't met expectations.
Right, we've talked about the different people that have been fired. Yeah.
And here's the thing. This is going to be the year they don't do that. It is on a level. If I didn't care so much about the Cleveland Browns, it'd be low key hilarious that it's the worst season since you got Baker Mayfield. And everyone's just like, you know what? We all took our medicine here. I think we all learned something here.
And on top of it, they feel better than they ever have, it seems like.
And then to say, here's what's... Okay.
The worst season we've ever seen them have, collectively, how is this the answer?
Infuriating, funny, you decide. It's not just that. You're so right about this because it's, hey, we all learned our lesson. What was that? Deshaun can still play. What? Wait, no. You can't say Deshaun's the only reason you haven't gotten back-to-back winning seasons yet.
Yeah.
And then also be like, hey, we've learned our lesson here. What's the lesson? That things haven't worked out. Why haven't they worked out? Well, it's a lot of reasons, but it is the Wizard of Oz behind the giant screen, off to the side over here. Just, guys, don't worry. Don't worry. I got this covered. We're smarter than you.
Yeah, you see how our brains are all warped from these discussions, though? I mean, think about it. They want to tell us in one corner that without Deshaun, everything would have been differently, and then the same piece is trying to tell us that with Deshaun, everything's going to be all right next year. It's bonkers.
Let's go real quick here to Tom in South Euclid, because Tom has a theory on why the Browns are motivated to keep Deshaun Watson. Tom, what you got for us real quick?
Hey, the Browns are just trying to have him play themselves out of them being liable. They're just going to give him a chance, and he's going to fail, and then they'll move on. It's that simple.
He's already failed. That's the problem.
But fail again.
I don't need to see him fail 12 million times to know that he's failed.
Well, let's see. Tore up one shoulder. Now he's got an Achilles. I think the injuries have played out. Yeah. Like, now, what's the next level of failure that you can get to? Quick hits next on 92.3 The Fan. We now go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Welcome on, Albert Breer of the MMQB. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, sorry about the confusion there. I'm at a youth hockey tournament, so I'm happy to jump on with you guys now. Happy New Year.
A happy New Year, my guy. We were just talking about Belichick on McAfee saying the NFL needs to implement a a anti-tanking device because of the end of the season issues, sort of what the Browns are doing, what the Patriots might be doing, and basically doing a lottery like the NBA. Do you think tanking is that pervasive where the NFL would benefit from that?
So I think like one thing that's interesting about it is it's gotten more pervasive, I think, with the advance of analytics. And that sounds like a little weird, but like you remember what the Eagles did a few years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're very analytically advanced, right? The Browns, like now you're seeing it again. But, you know, where's their wheelhouse been? They've been very analytically advanced. So, you know, I think what's happening with some of these teams now is not only is it like, yeah, we can get a better player. It's like, okay, look, so here's the impact of us not getting the better player, right? Here's the impact. Here's what we can do. Say if we have the second pick versus the sixth pick, if we trade the pick, right? Here's how much more we can get. And, you know, I think it just kind of comes down to, like, in a lot of these situations, like, we can't tank because it's really hard to do that in a sport that's like football. But we can – what we can do is we can engineer a lineup that's going to make it less likely that we win. So I know the NFL – I've looked into this in the past, the idea of a lottery, and I know the NFL has really not wanted to do it. But, yeah, I mean, I think if this sort of thing continues, if it looks bad this weekend, I could see where it becomes a discussion point again.
Yeah, I mean, Albert, I just think it stinks for fans of, like, the Giants, for instance. You watched and you're like, oh, we're finally have a great game. We've scored 30 points for the first time all year. But instead of the reaction being like they did something, the reaction was like, oh, no, they screwed up.
Yeah, I mean, I say it again, sorry.
No, just like the Giants this last weekend. Instead of the fans saying this was great, we scored 30 points for the first time this season. We were doing something. They looked at it like, oh, no, you screwed up. And for us here, we've had seven straight weeks of looking at it and saying, it'd be best if they lost.
And look, like if the Giants are dead set on taking Cam Porter or Shedeur Sanders, or let's just say they really like one and they don't like the other one, right? Let's say they view what they have like a top of the draft grade on one of them and then they have like a second or a third round grade on the other. And then they wind up with like the fourth pick. You guys know how much it's going to cost them to go from 4 to 1. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It could cost you 3 first round picks to do that. You know, like the fourth pick plus maybe your next 2 first rounders. So, like, I mean, like, what is the smart thing to do? Well, on paper, the smart thing to do would be to allow for your team to have a higher pick naturally and engineer the result that you need to get there. So I just think that that's what complicates it, you know, like where, it's pretty clear what the smart thing to do. And you'd like as a fan to be able to go into these situations and, you know, and root for your team on the level. And, you know, the Buffalo-New England game is really interesting this weekend where, I mean, New England's got the number one pick now. And I can tell you, living here, fans here are going to be rooting for the Patriots to lose. And then on the other end, you know, you got a Buffalo team that not only isn't going to be motivated to win because they're locked into the second seed, but as a division rival, maybe they want to see the Patriots win the game. You know, maybe the best result for them is for the Patriots not to get the first pick. So, you know, I there's no perfect way to fix it, but creatively, they could do what some of the other leagues have done with the draft lottery and those sorts of things.
Albert Breer of the QB on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Yesterday, the big announcement was that the Browns have let Mike Vrabel out of his consulting contract 1 week early to pursue other jobs around the NFL. Do you think it's a lock that Vrabel gets a head coaching job this cycle?
I think he's as close to a lock as anybody. You know, I think he and Ben Johnson are clearly the two bells of the ball. And, to the point where I think every team's going to want to at least talk to them. I think there are, you know, natural landing spots for him too. I mean, the Raiders are obvious, right, with Brady there. And that's been, you know, that's something that's kind of gone around in NFL circles for the last couple of months. The Giants, they have, you know, one of his picks for general manager would be Ryan Cowden. Well, Ryan Cowden works for the Giants now. And his defensive coordinator from Tennessee, Shane Bowen, who followed him all the way from Ohio State, he's there too, right? Like, so they could be a fit. I think the Maras would probably see some Parcells in Vrabel. If the Patriots were to open, that would be another one. The Bears, I think there's some natural reason why they would like Vrabel. The Saints have like a coach centric model that's waiting for someone like Vrabel to step in, you know. So yeah, I mean, I at the end of all this, like, I don't think he's gonna have a pick of any job he wants, but I think he will have multiple options, which is pretty rare. And you know, ultimately, I think if he wants a job, he'll get one.
Albert, I thought the Ohio State discussion had kind of simmered down, but in the past couple of days, it feels like it's reignited. And depending what happens with Oregon, tomorrow would probably be a big impact in all of this. But do you feel like college is still on the table if he doesn't like any of these NFL jobs, or is that just a no-go because he does have so many different options?
I think like it's one college and that's it. You know what I mean? I think if you asked him, like, he'd probably tell you he doesn't want to go back to college, and I think he's genuine with that. And I don't know this for a fact, but I think that he views himself. Well, I know he views himself as an NFL coach, but you know who was just like that was Jim Harbaugh. And Jim Harbaugh, I would have told you in 14 and 15, does not want to go back to college. Dealt with too much at Stanford. There are too many issues with it. Like, he just liked coaching the NFL better. And his alma mater kept asking and asking and asking, and eventually wound up getting him. You know, and so. You know, I don't think Mike's going to be sentimental about where he goes. Like, I don't think there's a sentimental tie for the Patriots, for example. Like, I think there are things he likes about the place, but I don't think he'd be sentimental about going back there. You know, and I don't think, like, that would really play into a decision to go back to college as much unless they kept after him. And unless it was, look, like, this is a place where you can come and have a statue built. You know what I mean? Like, to me, like, there's part of it where – you know, and I think it was this way for Jim Harbaugh. It's like, you looked at it, and it's like, eventually it was like, well, I could actually go there and be Bo Schembechler. And I think he'll be remembered in that sort of way at Michigan now. You know what I mean? Like, that's on the table for Vrabel, where, you know, like, if they kept asking him, they made the money right. They made it so maybe he doesn't have to do as much hands-on recruiting. He can kind of be the closer the way Nick Saban was, the way Jim Harbaugh was at the places that they were at. You know, then, you know, I think you could make it hard for him to say no on the premise that, like, hey, I can go do that for 6, 7, 8 years, go win a couple of national titles, go build a statue of me outside the Woody, and then I can still go coach in the NFL. So I think it's really unlikely. But, you know, just from, like, having followed the Jim Harbaugh thing, like, I would not rule it out, you know. You know, and look, like, there's this part of it too. He likes Columbus, so that could be part of the equation as well.
Albert, Vrabel getting let out of his contract early certainly lines up with every report in the last 8 weeks that Kevin Stefanski is safe, and yet there's some whisperings about maybe some assistant movement there. Yeah. I think there was one, I don't know if it's a fan theory or whether anyone actually reported it, maybe Andrew Berry moving up to DePodesta's old role and hiring a new GM. What do you think, what does the landscape look like when all the dust settles on 2024 for the Browns heading into 2025?
I think, like, leadership is probably static. I think that's the most likely scenario. Could there be some movement at different levels of the organization? Certainly. Like, I think anytime you go through the kind of season they've just had, you know, everything is going to be looked at. And so could there be some changes? The offensive staff, I could see that. You know, could there be some front office movement? Sure. But I think, like, Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are safe. And I would say, in all likelihood, they're coming back next year. And again, like, I think that was the plan all along, because of everything that they've gone through the last 2 years from an injury standpoint, and also because I think, like, everyone is taking responsibility for the Deshaun thing. It's not just those two. That was an organizational decision, you know. And so now it's going to be on them to go find a quarterback solution and bring in competition for Deshaun and see if they can get more out of Deshaun or someone else in 2025 at that spot.
Albert, we're in a new spot now. Now the Browns are pick number 3. Does that mean quarterback should be in play for the draft this year?
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to look at it. And I expect that they'll do all their homework on Shadur and Cam Ward, anybody else who will be available. And I think that that's why, I mean, look, like, the reality is, if you're a Browns fan, you should probably root for them to lose on Sunday. And I think that there are probably some people in that organization who quietly are hoping that happens. You know, because of the cost of going up in the draft at that point of the draft, right? Like, going up from 6 or 7 to 1 is much different than the cost of going up from 3-2 or 3-1, you know? So, you know, look, like logistically, because of Deshaun's contract, they're in a position where they probably can't go out and sign a Sam Darnold, you know? So, like, I think there's that leaves you with two routes to really create competition for Deshaun in the room. One is the reclamation project route, which is like you go the route that the Vikings went last year and getting a Sam Darnold. Maybe that's somebody like Justin Fields, you know, and believe in your ability to develop and get more out of somebody else's failed, you know, high draft pick, or you spend a high draft pick yourself. Just financially, that's the way they could make it work, where they could add real competition to the room to challenge Deshaun in 2025.
Albert, do the Browns think they're a quarterback away from being the team they thought they were going into the season?
Yeah, I think they do, and I actually think that they're not out of line to think that way. I mean, it's still a really good team. You got premier players in key spots, guys like Denzel Ward and Myles Garrett. Yeah, I think Jerry Jeudy's really starting to flash the promise of what he can be, and maybe he can be the guy that everybody envisioned him becoming when he came out of Alabama 4 years ago. So, you know, you've got some key pieces. You've got a good middle class. You got good infrastructure. You got a good head coach. I think they can rightfully look at it and say, you know, we should be in the double-digit win category if we can find a way to become better at the quarterback position, and not just like a little better, like significantly better than they were this year at the quarterback position.
All right, Albert, do the Buckeyes pull it off tomorrow?
God, I don't want to jinx anything. how do you guys feel?
I feel, I mean, it Oregon is the other best team in college football.
Calm. I don't know why I feel so calm. It's kind of bugging me, you know, but I mean, that team that played on that cold Saturday night in Columbus, I mean, I don't know. I think that's who we thought they were going to be the whole year. You know what I mean? Like, and I'll give you guys this little nugget. Like, one thing I heard after the Michigan game, like, you know, was how, and I heard this before the Michigan game too, but you guys have seen the statistic where, like, they're the slowest playing team in college football, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where they have, like, that there's the most time between plays. Like, it's like the opposite of what a Chip Kelly offense has always been. So, I don't know how much has been out there, but one thing that I heard was, like, when they looked at it, they wanted to treat this year like an NFL season because of the prospect of playing 16 or 17 games. So, the way they approached the season, they looked at it and said, okay, like, if we're going to approach the season that way, how do we lean into our strengths, which, you know, our running backs and our defense, like how do we lean into that and make sure we're not only winning with those strengths, but we're also preserving those strengths so they'll be at full speed when you get to December and January. The way to do that was to limit the amount of plays they're playing during the season, right? And so, like, they felt like you treat this like an NFL season. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Like, at least in the early stages, let's see if we can limit damage on our key players, limit damage on key areas of our team. And then we'll punch the gas when we get to December and January. And God, I hope that's what it is. You know, I mean, God, I hope that's where we're at right now, because it feels like it could be.
Albert, great stuff. Not just today, but all year long, buddy. We get a little misty on New Year's Eve, so just want to say thank you and great stuff as always, buddy. Enjoy time with the family at the hockey.
Happy New Year to everybody out there. Do you guys have predictions on tomorrow's game then?
No, I'm not doing it. I've ruined the Browns ruined predictions for me this year because I was wrong every time.
Albert, I do have hope in the idea that Oregon's played three playoff teams, and all three, although they've won every one of them, all three have put up 30-plus points. And I listen, Dylan Gabriel's nice. I call him welfare Tua. I don't think he's going to destroy this defense. So I think he got a good chance.
Here's the other thing. The last time we played them, that was right before they sort of changed structurally what they were doing defensively and started attacking more. And I think you saw the pass rush start to come alive after that game. So I don't think Dylan Gabriel is going to be sitting back there on a lawn chair the same way he was back in October. So, go Bucks.
Go Bucks, Albert. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Albert Breer, the MMQB on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Obviously, we got plenty of Ohio State Oregon to get to coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, but we'll react to his thoughts on the changes or lack thereof in Cleveland and the state of the Browns next on 92.3 The Fan.